Okay, so the last couple of days we've talked about equations of lines, and we're going to come back to that soon and throughout the course. But now we're going to start talking about something called relations and functions. Now, so let me remind you, we have a quiz tomorrow, and of course, like all of our other quizzes, you come in and you work on it a little bit, you work with your friends, and it's open note, open book, open friend. So it's going to cover everything that we've talked about this week, including everything today. And I think Diane plans to hand out a practice handout for the equations of lines. So I think that probably at the end of the class, Diane?
Yes, I have a semester practice on graphing lines.
Yeah, so take that home with you and do that in addition to the homework that's due tomorrow. And again, the homework that's due tomorrow, which is going to be on relations and functions, that's going to be on the quiz as well. So, I actually like this example. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit, and then we'll kind of break off into a digression and talk about relations in general. So I want to say a few words about that. So imagine that you have some, say, states of the United States, and each of those states has a, let's say, a median income for the wage earners in that state. And so the arrows connect the state to the median income, and these are in thousands of dollars. So that's $55,000 a year, $65,000 a year, and so on. And so you can see, I think it's pretty obvious just by looking at this diagram, that Alabama has, in the state, the median income. And by the way, median, if you're not quite sure what that word means, it just means that half of the incomes are below that number and half are above. So it's kind of the dividing point for all of the incomes in the state. Because not everybody earns $55,000 a year. Some people earn less, some people earn more. And so that's the kind of the dividing line for that state. So Alabama earns the median income. And this median and average are related, but they're not exactly the same thing. So Alabama's median is $55,000. Indiana's median is $65,000. Notice here, now these are, I'm not sure if these numbers are accurate or if they're made up or what, but they're saying that Alaska and Colorado and Illinois all have the same median income, which is $72,000 a year. And then Massachusetts, 83. And you think, oh, I want to live in Massachusetts. Well, be careful. Massachusetts is an expensive state to live in. So you got to earn more money just to keep up. So this kind of diagram is something that we call a relation. And a relation is just a relationship between some set of things, and we can draw it on the left, and some other set of things that we can draw on the right. So in this case, states and median incomes. And so we can go ahead and fill out this part of the notes. What is the median income in Illinois? $72,000. In what state or states is the median income $72,000? Yeah, so I'd write, just make a list, Alaska, Colorado, and Illinois. And of course, there's other questions that we could ask and answer about that. One thing I want to mention is that we're going to be talking about ordered pairs, and it's Yeah, in fact, that's the next thing that they talk about here. So let's go ahead and do this one. So the relation above, and again, this is known as a relation because it's a set of ordered pairs. Ordered pairs meaning something gives something. Alabama implies that you have $55,000 median income. We're going to see other examples of relations. But so the relation above could be described by a set of ordered pairs. List the ordered pairs. Okay, well, I'm going to do that for you. So Alabama, if I can spell Alabama, comma, 55. I'll just leave it as 55. And you put parentheses around them to indicate that it's an ordered pair. And the next one is Indiana. Put it in parentheses. So Indiana, comma, what? 65. And notice I'm putting commas between the ordered pairs. That's just a kind of a nice way to indicate that these are, you know, separated. And Alaska, comma, what, 72, good, comma, and go down here, Colorado, comma, 72, comma, Illinois, comma, what, 72, comma, and then finally, I'm just going to write Mass, because I don't like to write all those letters. Massachusetts, comma, 83. And so the set of ordered pairs. Now, each one of these is an ordered pair. Why do we say ordered pair? Well, because they're in a particular order. The state comes first, and then the median income. State, median income. State, median income. If you switch them around, then, well, wait a minute. That's, you know, 72 Alaska. You wouldn't... Is that the state? No. The state is Alaska, and that's supposed to go first. So it's an ordered pair, and it's a pair because it's two things. And any ordered pair, we're going to put in parentheses like that. Now, it's a set, so strictly speaking, I would put these curly braces around it. But if you guys don't do that, that's fine. That's kind of a subtlety. The fact that it's a set, it says described by a set of ordered pairs, this is the right way to write the set of ordered pairs. Is this all pretty clear? No big deal? Okay, now, let me digress for a moment, and I'm going to make up maybe a simpler example. So, you'll see this a lot of times where you'll have like a circle or an oval or something on the left and an oval on the right. And so, like here we had state and median income. So we had the list of states on the left and we had the median incomes on the right. So in general, this set over here is known as the domain of the relation. So we just call it the domain. And this set over on the right is called the range. And every relation has a domain and a range. And let me just make up a simple example here. So if I say 1, 2, 3, 4, what's the domain? Yeah, it's a set of the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so if I was going to write domain equals, so domain equals, I could do it with set notation, which is the right way to do it, or you can just list the numbers. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And let's say the range is 5, 6, 7. So just some numbers in the right set. the right oval. So I'm going to write range is equal to 5, 6, 7. And now the arrows indicate the relationship between these two sets, between the domain and the range. So let's say, and I'm just making this up, let's say 1 goes to 5 and 6, and 2 goes to 6, and 3 goes to 7, and let's say 4 goes to 5. Now I'm trying to make this a little, you know, maybe a little interesting. You can imagine different kinds of applications of this. Right now, I don't know why this is coming into my head now, but we used to, when I was younger, we used to go roller skating, and they put the boys on one side and the girls on the other side, and you know, you'd like, okay, I want to go for that person, right? And so there'd be an arrow from person A to person, you know, C, and so maybe these are the boys and maybe these are the girls, okay? So that, in fact, the word relationship actually makes sense in that kind of application. So now what would the ordered pairs be for this particular relation? In fact, let me write relation here just to make sure we know that that's what that is. So what are the ordered pairs?
1, 5.
What's the next one?
1, 6.
Good. 2, 6. Now you want to be careful. So one had two of them coming out, two arrows coming out. Two had one arrow. Three has one arrow. So what's the next one? 3, 7 and 4, 5. And so that is the set of ordered pairs for that relation. And really with relations, relation, the word relation is a mathematical term. It's a technical term in mathematics. So you can have you don't have to just have numbers as elements of these, say, of the domain and the range. Like in our first example, we've got states in the domain and incomes in the range. So, anyway, let's see, what else do I want to say? So we'll come back to this in a little bit. So let's continue with our example. Now they're telling us in these notes the domain is a set of all x values and the range is a set of all y values. Now what we're going to do is, in fact, I guess I could go ahead and say this here. These are all the x's and these are all the y's. And we don't have to use x and y. We can use state and median income or, you know, other labels. But in this course, and in, you know, a lot of mathematics, x is going to be associated with the domain and y is going to be associated with the range. So that's why they're saying this in the notes. And so then they ask you, okay, what is the domain and range of the above relation? Well, we can see the ordered pairs, so tell me what the domain is.
Alabama.
Okay, good. So Alabama. Indiana, Alaska, Colorado, Illinois, and Massachusetts. And so the set consisting of all of those things is known as the domain. And what's the range? 55, 65, 72, and 83. Okay? Now, let me just kind of give you a roadmap here of where we're going with all this. We're going to talk about relations a little bit, but mostly we're going to get into something called functions, and it's going to turn out that all functions are relations. So if we understand relations, we're well on our way to understanding functions, and functions is going to become the language of the rest of the course. And I like to tell students this in a college algebra course early on. Some people wonder, why is it called college algebra? Because a lot of you have seen algebra before. Well, there's different kinds of algebra, and one of the algebras that you're going to be learning in this course is function algebra. And they don't really say that explicitly, but there's an algebra of functions. And there's an algebra of matrices. We're going to do that later on in the course as well. We've already done algebra of real numbers to some extent. We're going to continue to work on that. But the algebra of functions is an important part of mathematics, and it's part of this course. So the reason we're studying relations is so that we can understand functions better. And because, like I say, functions is going to be the heart and soul of this course. Once we get into it, you'll see what I'm talking about. So, any questions on this first page of notes? Again, I like this example. It's a practical example. Now, let's do this. Okay, now this may look a little weird. You got a coordinate system with some points labeled on it, so dots graphed on the coordinate system. Well, guess what? That is a relation. Because it's a set of ordered pairs. In fact, maybe the first thing we should do with this example is write down the ordered pairs. So, before we try to answer the question of what's the domain and what's the range, if you would help me out here, let's say work from left to right. What's the first ordered pair? Negative 4, comma 3. Good. What's the next one going from left to right? How about negative 2, comma negative 1? Comma, and then the next one?
Negative 1 and 2.
Negative 1, comma, 2, comma, what's the next one?
2,
negative 3, very good. Comma, and the last one is what?
3 and negative 2.
3, comma, negative 2. Now, you know, I'm going to admit something to you guys. I have to, when I look at something like that, I have to be careful because it's easy to get confused between the x-coordinate and the y-coordinate. It's easy to miss a point, just leave it off completely. You know, really there's no difference between you and me. I've just been doing this longer. And you all can do this at the same level that I can do it with just a little bit of practice. Okay? So, and when you write down a set of ordered pairs, I mean, one way to check your work, so count the points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you got all the points. So that's one check. Another is, you know, you might even just go through and say, okay, is this a point that's on the graph? Is this a point? So negative 4, comma 3, negative 4, comma 3, yes, that's right. And you could go through and check them. Okay, so now we have the set of ordered pairs. Once we have the set of ordered pairs, then answering the other questions is actually quite easy. So what is the domain of this relation? Okay, negative 4, negative 2, negative 1, 2, that's this 2 here, and 3. And like they said in the notes, the domain is the set of x values. So this is an x and this is a y, x, y, x, y, x, y, x, y. And so if you want to know what the domain is, you just look to see what are all the x values. So negative 4, negative 2, negative 1, 2, and 3. Those are the what I would call the elements of the domain. They are the, or you can call them members, the members of the domain. And then the range, so what would that be? So it's a set, and what are the range values? 3, comma, negative 1, 2, negative 3, negative 2. Very good. Now, you know, to be really, I guess, proper, we probably want to write these sets in ascending order, but for now, I'm happy just to get it written down properly. So now, the domain, because we went from left to right, the domain was in ascending order. We started on the far left, so that's where the x value is the smallest, right? Over here, x is negative 4. And as we go to the right, x gets bigger. So notice that these domain values are actually in ascending order. Negative 4, negative 2, negative 1, 2, 3. Well, not quite true with the range. Why? Because they kind of bounced around on the graph. So this is correct. There's nothing incorrect about this range. But like if you saw that in a textbook or a paper or something, it would probably be written with these numbers in ascending order. So you could reorder it and say, well, it's negative 3, negative 2, negative 1, 2, and 3. But that's not a requirement for you guys. I don't really care if you put them in ascending order or not, because this is absolutely correct for the members of the range. Okay. So, we good so far? Okay, so now I want to digress a little bit and talk about functions. So I think they kind of jump into it a little bit here. So so you won't know this yet because we haven't told you, but I want you to think about what is a relation. Okay, a relation is a set of ordered pairs. What is a function? Well, a function is a relation. And let me write this down. So this is going to be our definition. So a function is a relation where each input has exactly one output. So let's go back to our first example. And I'm going to ask you the question, is this a function? Now, first of all, remember, a function is a relation. So, is this a relation?
Yes.
Yes. So it satisfies at least the first part of the definition of a function. Now, we think of these over here as inputs and these as outputs because the arrow goes from input to output. So the other part of the definition, it says function is a relation where each input has exactly one output. So easiest way to do this is to go through and see, okay, does Alabama have only one output? Yes. Does Indiana have one output? Does Alaska have one output? Yes. Colorado? Yes. Illinois? Yes. Massachusetts? Yes. So this is a function. So it's a relation. And a function. Now, as you might guess, there are relations that are not functions. So let's go to my other example that I made up. Is this a relation? Is it a relation? Yes, it's a relation. Okay. Is it a function? Well, does one have only one output? No, because it has two outputs. It's got a 5. It's, one of the outputs is a 5 and the other output is a 6. So we could stop right there once we find something that tells us it's not a function and say, well, it's not a function, right? If you want, you can go on. 2 has exactly one output. 3 has one output. 4 has one output. So 1 is, in this case, the offending member of the domain that does not have exactly one output. So I'll say relation, but not a function. And this is the reasoning that we are going to use whenever we're looking at something to see whether it's a function or not. And we're going to see different ways of representing functions. Even today, we'll do a couple. So any questions so far about relations and functions? Okay. So we're on the other side here. Okay. Okay, so let's look at these two examples. Now, we've already done this one. It says, determine whether each relation below is a function. What's the answer here? Function. Okay. Now, here's another relation. Why is it a relation? Well, because it's a set of ordered pairs. It's got a domain and a range. These numbers over here are in the domain. These numbers over here are in the range. And by the way, relations have domain and range, and functions have domain and range. So don't let anybody tell you that a domain, that a relation doesn't have a domain and a range. It certainly does. So is this... We could write down the ordered pairs, or we could just look at the diagram and see, is this a function? No. Because 4, it does have exactly one output, but 6 has two outputs, and 8 has two outputs. So it violates the definition of what a function is. So it is a relation, but not a function. And this is a function and relation, obviously. So all functions are relations, but not all relations are functions. It's like saying all whales are mammals, but not all mammals are whales. So that's kind of that relationship. Okay. How are we doing? Still okay? See, a lot of people consider this to be one of the hard things to do in this course. And if you guys are okay with this, then I think we're well on our way. Okay, so now this next page, this is going to take a little bit of discussion. So let me digress again And so now we're talking about function notations. Let me write that here. Function notation. And basically what that means is how do we write functions on paper? And the most common way that you're going to see to do this in this course or in any course is y is equal to f of x. How many of you have seen this expression, this way of writing things? So a few people are putting your hands up. That's good. So maybe half of you are shyly putting up your hands. It's like, well, I've seen it. I don't know what it means, maybe. And that's okay, but we're going to talk about it. And by the end of this course, you guys are going to be experts in this notation. Okay. So here's what I want to do. I want to break this down and show you what each of these pieces of this notation means. And then as we go through the course, we're going to keep coming back to these ideas. So, now to help understand this, I'm going to draw a picture. And I'm going to call it the function machine. Some of you may have seen this before. This is actually how I learned about functions when I was, 45 years, more than that, 50 years ago, oh my God. So function machine has been around a long time, and so I'm just going to draw a function machine here. So, and this is, I'm not very good at drawing, so I hope you'll forgive me if I don't do it exactly right. Can you imagine what this is? So think meat grinder, okay? And there's a crank in here, and you can turn the crank, and something goes in here and comes out here. And what's inside here? What do you think? What's inside the meat grinder? The what? What is it?
Whatever you
use. The crank? What do you think the crank is? I mean, what are the words that we've been using?
The equation.
I haven't actually said the word equation yet today, but you're right. What you're thinking is correct. But I want you to use the right word. Starts with an F.
Function.
Okay, good. So the function is the thing that takes the input and churns out the output. And I'm going to put the function right here, and I call it F. So F is a rule that takes an input and produces an output. Now, how is that related to our idea of an ordered pair? How is it related to the idea of a relation? Well, the ordered pair, let's say you put an X here, what are you going to get on the output?
A Y.
Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And so, we're going to break this down, and we're going to see that, yes, you're right, it is a Y, but we've got one step to go before we get there. If I have F as my function, and that's the thing that's inside the machine that's producing the outputs, and by the way, if you're a vegetarian, you don't have to think meat grinder, you can think carrot grinder. Or,
blender
or something. Yeah, something. The problem with a blender, I use a blender every day, but it just stays right there. Right?
Like a juicer. You put in a carrot, you get a carrot juice out.
Right, but you want this thing to come out, right? You don't want it to just sit there and bubble, whoa, But, okay, so you put a carrot in, and out comes carrot stuff. I don't know what, but carrot, slivers of carrot. You guys probably know more about carrot grinding than I do. But, okay, so what comes out, actually, we're going to call F of X. Now, this is notation, So you put an input in to the function, and what you get is the output. This f of x is the output. The input is x, the output is f of x. Now you say, well, what about the y? Well, the y, so f of x, we're going to assign it to the variable y. So we're going to say f of x is equal to y. And the reason we do that is so that we can graph these things on coordinate axes. We'll put the x in the horizontal, the y in the vertical. I always have to think, okay, is this horizontal? Horizontal, yeah. Vertical, yeah. So you put x, that's the input. It goes into the function machine, gets processed by the function, and then you generate your f of x output, and then you're going to assign that to y. Now let's do an easy example. Let's say f of x is equal to 2x plus 5. Okay? By the way, what if I replace this with a y, what would this thing be?
An
equation of
a line.
A line, right? We're going to call this a linear function. We're going to get fancy in a little bit. But basically, this is an equation of a line, except I've replaced the y with an f of x, because I want to tell you this is the function rule for deciding what the function is going to do to the input. What is the input to this function?
The x
is the input. X is the input. Now, what do you do with the input when you evaluate this function? Well, you take the input and you multiply by 2, and then you take that number, whatever that number is, and you add 5, and hallelujah, you have your output for that particular input. And you already know how to do this. You guys have been evaluating functions in the first part of this course already. So let's imagine, instead of x, let's say that we're going to put in a particular input, let's say negative 3. So negative 3 is going to be our input. Now what's going to come out? Well, we can calculate that. So I'm going to say f of negative 3. Now, why did I put the negative 3 there?
So you know the output belongs to that input.
Yes, that's perfect. You know that, in fact, you said it better than I would say it. Thank you. That's really good. So that you know that that output is associated with the input negative 3. So I would say, well, you just replace x with negative 3 everywhere. Okay? But the reason you're doing that is so that you know that the output, whatever that is associated with this input, negative 3. The input goes in the parentheses here. It also replaces any of the x's that you have in your function definition. So you get 2 times negative 3. Notice I put parentheses around the negative 3. Why do we do that? Well, because I don't want to have a problem if I'm distributing or if I've got a minus sign or something like that. It's a good practice to put parentheses around your inputs, and then you'll remember to do like the distributing or the negatives or whatever. Plus 5. Well, this is equal to negative 6 plus 5, which is equal to what? Negative 1, so I put a negative 1 here. So if the out or the input is negative 3, we put it into the input. Did I say that right? If the input is negative 3, we put it into the input, and the function processes that input and turn the crank and do the calculation, and it turns out the negative 1. And that negative 1 is going to be our f of x, f of negative 3 in this case. And we're also going to call that our y. So in this case, f of negative 3 is equal to negative 1. And I'm just going to put a box around that because that's kind of important. Because you'll see examples of this. In fact, you might even be asked, okay, can you write the ordered pair associated with this statement? The statement says f of negative 3 is equal to negative 1. What is the ordered pair?
Negative 3, negative 1.
Because, remember, the ordered pair is going to be the x, comma, y. It's ordered because x is kind of special, y is special, and they have their role, they have their place. The x is the input, the y is the output. You got to put the input first and the output second. And so, so that's why we know that this is the input because it's going into the function. It's inside these parentheses here, it's going into the function, and then the output is this negative 1, so that's got to be the y. So the ordered pair is negative 3, comma, negative 1. And because this is going to generate a set of ordered pairs, this must be a relation. Now, this may sound like a silly question, but is it a function? I've been using the word function. I've talked about function notation and so on. But, I mean, why do you think this is a function? Why do we... The word function has a very special meaning to us now. It's a relation that, what? For each input has one and only one output. If you say one output, that's fine. I like to emphasize the one and only one output. So, and by the way, it's not possible to have no outputs. Otherwise, it's not part of the domain, and it's not in the relation. Okay, so it's got to have one and only one output. So this obviously is it's a relation because it's a set of ordered pairs, but is it a function by our definition? The answer is yes, but why? I want to ask that question because I want you to think about this. Understand why... this is a function as we've defined it. Yes?
When you put in negative 3 into that equation, you'll only ever get negative 1 out.
That's right. It's not possible to get two answers when you plug a number into this kind of expression. Now, it's not always going to be the case. You're going to find that there are some situations where you could get two answers. And then that thing, whatever that thing is not going to be a function. But this is clearly a function because for each input, you get one and only one output. So it is a function by our definition of a function. So I want to go back and break this down, make sure that we understand what all the pieces are. So I'm going to put a little arrow to the F and call that the function. Some people think that f of x is the function. And that's not wrong. It's just, I want to distinguish it just a little bit more and say that the f is the function. The x is the input to the function. F of x is the output of the function. And this y is a variable that's equal to the output. So now we've broken this down. Y equals f of x. We know what each piece means. The parentheses have to be there because they tell you what the input is. Whatever is that thing inside the parentheses is the input. Which means I don't have to use X as the input. Let's say, okay, so now let's take the same example, f of x is equal to 2x plus 5. But now what I want to do is I want to replace the input with something a little weirder. We already know how to handle numbers. If you put a number in fact, let's just do another one of those. So f of 4 is equal to what? Well, it's 2 times what? 4 plus 5. 2 times 4 is 8, plus 5 is 13. So f of 4 is equal to 13. What about f of negative 1? Well, it's 2 times negative 1 plus 5, which is equal to negative 2 plus 5, which is 3. And what are the ordered pairs associated with this? 4, 13, and what about this one? Negative 1, 3. Okay, good. So, we know how to handle numbers. When you put a number in for the input, we're pretty well rehearsed on this. We've done this quite a bit in this course. You take that number, you plug it in for X, and then you do the evaluation. It's just PEMDAS. Right? Just follow the order of operation rules and evaluate. What if I write, so F of T plus 2? Uh-oh. Can I do that, first of all? Is that legal? Sure, why not? It's an input. I'm saying I'm going to put T plus 2 into the input of that function. I'm going to put a T plus 2 into this meat grinder, or the carrot grinder. And if you get a T plus 2 going in, what are you going to get coming out? F of T plus 2. Now, this is the output, but we don't know how to evaluate this unless we know what F is. Well, here we know what F is. We're taking 2 times the input, and we're adding 5. So coming back down here, 2 times the input plus 5. Well, what's the input? T plus 2. So, in particular, anything that's inside these parentheses is the input. T is not the input. T plus 2 is the input in this particular problem. And so, every place I see an X here, we're going to replace that X with what? T plus 2. So I have 2 times T plus 2 plus 5 equals distribute. Notice the importance of these parentheses. So this is reminding us that we have to distribute. So we get 2T plus 4 plus 5, which is equal to 2t plus 9. So what's the ordered pair?
T plus 2.
T plus 2, 2t plus 9. Perfect. That's the ordered pair. Now you might say, those aren't numbers. I agree. Unless, if you don't know what t is, but once you know what t is, then you can plug that in and get that ordered pair. Okay? So let's go. I think I've said enough about functions as a digression, as an introduction. So let's go back to the notes. And this will make a lot more sense now, hopefully. So, what they're telling us in the notes, and by the way, everything they write here in the notes is correct. It may be a little weird, you know, weird notation or whatever, but I think it's correct. So, the function of the input is equal to the output. So, and then they shorten that to f of x is equal to y. So the function of the input is equal to the output. I would add one little thing and say that f of x really is the output, and we're making that equal to y. So, and we're already pretty familiar with this y equals f of x. So now in our states example, remember this guy? Well, we decided that that is a function, and so they're giving it the name median underscore income. Instead of calling it f, they can call it median underscore income. And by the way, we do that all the time in mathematics. We don't always use the letter f to represent a function. And here the input is what? Indiana. And so if you look back at your table, what is the output for Indiana? 65. And so so therefore the median income of Indiana is equal to 65, and that's $65,000. And now it's asking, now there's a 10, so this was problem 9, this is problem 10, 11, looks like 10 is kind of got, somebody forgot to put a problem 10 there. An editing error. Find x such that the median income of x is equal to 72. Well, there's not going to be just one answer. What would our x's include? Alaska, Colorado, Illinois. So I'm going to write those down. So x equals Alaska, Colorado, Illinois. Okay. Now we'll have a lot more to say about this process. This is kind of going in the reverse direction. And once we understand functions in the forward direction, input leads to output, then we'll talk about output leads to input, and that's a whole other conversation, and we'll get there a little later in the course. But they're kind of setting us up for that right now. Okay. Now, symbolic functions, I mean, our example of f of x equals 2x plus 5 is a what I would call a symbolic representation of a function. A way of writing down the function in a way that, in terms of an equation that you can evaluate, or an expression that you can evaluate. So, now here they're giving us a little bit more complicated function. By the way, if you ever have anything that looks like y equals f of x, if you're using that notation, you are talking about a function, with very rare exceptions. So, you know, if I ask you, what is the function, you say f, or f of x. And it really is a function. If it's only a relation and it's not a function, you cannot use this notation. It is not legal to do that. Okay, so symbolic just means using symbols, like x's and y's and squares and square roots and other things. So h of t is a function of t. It's you know, h of t would be the output if you put t in for the input. And it's equal to, in this case, negative 16 t squared plus 64 t. And they're telling you it represents the height h of a model rocket in feet t seconds after launch. So, in other words, if you... Now, we're going to see problems like this later on, so let me just give you a quick... So if you have a little rocket here, and it blasts off, right? And let's say it goes up. Now, obviously, has anybody ever in here launched rockets in their backyard or someplace? I mean, this is something we used to do as kids. There's water rockets, and you've got these solid fuel rockets and different things. And back before everybody got so paranoid about fires and whatever, I used to live next to a cornfield. So after they plowed the corn, we'd go back there and build fires and shoot rockets and all sorts of things. But so the rocket goes straight up, and assuming there's no wind, it'll eventually come back down, unless you've got a really powerful rocket, which I couldn't afford. And so it eventually comes back down, but at some point, there's the height, and that height depends on how long it's been flying. So h of t, the height of the rocket, depends on how long it's been in the air. And this is, you know, once you fire off the rocket, then it's really just a projectile traveling through the air. And it will, it's going to obey the laws of physics. And we're not going to talk about physics in this course, thankfully. So, but the formula from physics is this negative 16 t squared plus 64 t. It turns out the 64 is the initial velocity in feet per second, and negative 16 is the gravitational acceleration at the surface of the Earth divided by 2. So, if you take physics, you'll learn all that. Okay. So, the height h as at a particular time t. Okay, and it's asking you, okay, evaluate h of 2. Well, first of all, what does that mean? There's no point in doing a calculation if you don't know what it means. What's h of 2? What's the 2?
2 seconds.
Okay, good. So that's the height of the rocket 2 seconds after launch. And so now we're going to figure out what that is. So h of 2 is equal to negative 16 times... Now, I replace the t in our definition of the function with the 2, so we get negative 16 times 2 squared plus 64 times 2. Now, 2 squared is 4. 4 times 16 is 64. Is that right? And negative 64 plus 128. So, negative 64 plus 128 is 64. And so we get 64 feet. So the rocket is 64 feet in the air 2 seconds after launch. So in a problem like this, where it's actually an application, where, you know, you've got, it's like a word problem where they're giving you additional information, it's a rocket, it's being launched, then you need to be able to interpret those words and interpret the formula. And so 2 seconds after launch, the rocket is 64 feet above the ground. Okay, how about h of 4? Well, that's negative 16 times 4 squared. Notice I put the 4 in parentheses because that's our input, and I'm replacing the t with the 4. And then plus 64 times 4. Now, 16, so 4 times 4 is 16. 16 times 16 is 256, I think. 4 times 64 is 256. So 256 minus 256 is equal to 0. Did I do that arithmetic correctly? So you might want to check on your calculator. Make sure Dave is correct on the calculation of the height here, because I don't want to embarrass myself and get a wrong answer. So is it correct? We're okay with it? Okay, so 0. So what does that mean? 4 seconds after launch, where is the rocket? Back on the ground. So where was it really at 2 seconds? What was happening at 2 seconds? It was at 64 feet, but what is the special thing about 64 feet? It's the highest point. So it goes up for 2 seconds, and then it comes down for 2 seconds. And it may not be obvious that that's going to happen. And it may not even happen in an atmosphere, but in a vacuum, if you were doing this on the moon, it would behave this way. So we now know that 64, so this is 0 feet, so 64 feet is the highest it gets, and by the time 4 seconds have elapsed, the rocket is back down to the ground. This is a pretty puny rocket, as far as I'm concerned. If it only goes 64 feet into the air, I mean, what is that? That's like a 6-story building, and you know, and then back down. So, okay. Questions about that? Okay, let's do this next one. So now they're giving us f of x equals negative 5x plus 1. And so what is f of 5? Well, it's negative 5 times 5 plus 1. And then we're subtracting f of 3. What is f of... So because I'm subtracting, I'm going to put that in parentheses so I can distribute the minus sign. What is f of 3? So it's negative 5 times 3 plus 1. And now we can evaluate this. So negative 25 plus 1, distribute the minus sign so you get minus the negative is plus, so plus 5 times 3 plus 15. And then what's the last term? Minus, that's right, minus 1. And now, so these ones cancel, you get negative 25 plus 15 is negative 10. If I did that arithmetic correctly. What about f of x plus 3? Where does the x plus 3 go? It replaces the x in the definition of the function. So this becomes negative 5 times what? X plus 3 plus 1. Distribute. So you get negative 5x minus what? 15. Plus 1, so you get negative 5x minus 14. And that's the answer. So f of x plus 3 is equal to that. Negative 5x plus or minus 14. Okay? Now we're going to have an opportunity to practice this more. Now these next two are student activities. Let's go ahead and take a few minutes and work on these. And by the way, let's just make an agreement on this particular problem. Don't worry about the words. The word problem is a little goofy the way it's worded. So what I want you to do is find n of t minus 1, where n of t is 43 plus 5t. So just go ahead and work that out. Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead and work on that next page. So you can you see it?
Yes.
That part? Okay. So if you didn't finish copying this down, you can copy it down. But go ahead and figure out what n of t minus 1 is on the next page. You got it? Okay. So when you substitute the t minus 1 in for the t, be sure to simplify. Okay, so you can see what I've done here. So I've just recopied the n of t. N of t is 43 plus 5t. This t is just a, really it's just a placeholder for the input. So now I'm asking you to plug in t minus 1 every place you see a t. So you get 43 plus 5 times the quantity t minus 1. Distribute the 5, so you get 43 plus 5t minus 5. And then simplify, you get 38 plus 5t. So that's the answer. Yes?
Does it
have to be 5t plus 38? It could be 5t plus 38. I was just following the convention that they had in the original problem. We're not thinking of these as lines necessarily, although you're right, to, you know, it's mx plus b. But, yeah, and I think Diane had said we're always going to write it mx plus b, and that's true if we're talking about lines. Okay, and quickly, let's do this last problem. This should be easy now. So this is a relation. You see that they've actually written it ordered pairs with set notation, so they got the curly brace in the beginning and the end. And is this relation a function? Is it a function?
No.
No, it's not a function. Why is it not a function?
Zero.
Well, yeah, 0 has two different outputs, and 2 has two different outputs. So if you wish, you can write that on the explanation. What's the domain? Now, I haven't said this before, but let me say it now. When you write a domain, you don't want to duplicate numbers. So what is the domain of this relation? 0, 2, 4. Even though the 0 appears twice, we don't repeat the 0. Now, it's not terribly wrong to do that, but it's just bad form, and we kind of avoid doing that if we can. And then the range, what's the range? 0, 4, 8, 12, 16. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Diane. She wants to talk about the homework.
You need our newspaper and you need our projector.
Okay, so while you're getting that out, this is the extra practice online worksheet that I'm handing out to y'all. If you want to practice graphing a few lines, there's literally 12 of them. You would like to be able to graph a line in about 5 seconds. Plunk down the y-intercept, count over the slope, put a dot, connect it, move on to that arrowhead, go on to the next one. So it's kind of a test to see how well you can graph some lines. There's 12 of them, including some horizontal and vertical. The answers are on the next page. So that's the key. It's the key on top. Yes. The second page is just moving some lines into form, and you'll see I wrote the word stop, row, pulling them. I did do that for years because I didn't realize it goes beyond what we did. So stop where it says stop. So Dave's going to hand that out. I would practice that if I would. Wait. All right. So here's your big task. You have a take-home quiz, or you have a group quiz tomorrow, and the directions give you this problem right here. And the coordinates are 4, negative 6. And the second coordinate is negative 5, negative 3. And I want the equation of a line in y equals mx plus b form passing through these two points. This is the exact problem that y'all did for homework, by the way. There were so many mistakes. We're going to do it together real quick right now. What's the first thing you're going to do?
Find the slope.
Find the slope. Always find the slope. So m equals... I subtract back like this. So negative 3 minus negative 6, negative 5 minus 4. Super important, because if your slope's wrong, everything below it's going to be wrong. What is negative 3 minus negative 6? We still have two people getting that part wrong in the class. It's negative 3 plus 6, which is 3. If you can't get that on your own, just key it into your calculator, because it's super important that number be right. How about negative 5 minus 4? Negative 9, right? Yeah, negative 9. So that's my initial slope. If that fraction can reduce, should we do it? If you don't know whether or not that fraction should reduce, your calculator does. So you could literally kind of cheat and just go negative 3, A, B, C, 9, and hit equals, and it's going to reduce it for me. You have this, so use it. Okay, so better slope, more correct slope, negative 1/3. Perfect. Now what do we do? I've got the slope. I need the equation of the line. Yeah, you need to get the y-intercept. He taught you that technique yesterday. So you write down y equals mx plus b. And you plug into those three letters, or the four letters, the three that you know. So you have a legit XY pair up there, and most people use the one on the left, so I'm just going to use the one on the left also. So when you use the one on the left, this is your Y, so you have negative 6 equals negative 1/3 when X is 4 plus B. And then we came to some crashing mistakes right now. And when you were doing your homework. So, can you take out your calculator and multiply for me negative 1/3 times 4, if you cannot do that in your head. So, it's using that ABC key. So, negative 1 ABC 3, and then you just hit times 4. If your calculator is like mine, it's going to write it as a mixed number. We don't want it as a mixed number, though. We wish to keep it as the improper fraction for this. How do you do that? What key do I hit? It's the second feature of the ABC key. So second ABC says, do you want me to be rewritten as a mixed number? Improper fraction, yes. Negative 4/3. Maybe you could just do that and know it's negative 4/3. Maybe you can't. But you want to get negative 4/3 right there. Are we okay with that part so far? Now, how do I figure out what B is? Add 4/3, because it's currently negative. So we want to add 4/3 to both sides. So plus 4/3 plus 4/3. So you take out your calculator again, and you key in negative 6 plus 4/3. So negative 6 plus 4/3. And once again, my calculator is going to, it's kind of trained to give it to me as a mixed number. I don't want the mixed number. I want the improper fraction. So that is the second feature of that ABC key. So second ABC says convert me back, and you get negative 14 thirds. So B is equal to negative 14 thirds. They're both fractions in this problem that was given to you in your homework. Your M was a fraction, and your B was a fraction. And they both happen to be negative. So over here on the answer blank, you're going to write Y equals negative 1 third. Is it important that I put an X there? Yeah, because it's Y equals MX plus B. Some people just left out the X altogether, so we don't want to do that. We want to put X. And then our B was negative 14 thirds. So when I was grading this problem, it was worth 10 points because there were 5, at 10, like there were 5 at 50 points, so 10 points each. And I gave you like 10 points for having the slope right. I mean, 5 points for the slope and 5 points for the y-intercept. Some of you got the correct slope, but not the y-intercept, because right here, you didn't know what to do. And maybe you chose the clear fraction, so you multiplied that guy by 3 and that guy by 3, but not that one. Your calculator does these fractions for you, so I'm going to suggest you just keep the fractions going in there. Okay, so I'm going to let, will you hand this back as I'm going over the last? So we've got 4 minutes. I'm just going to do the last one. So the last problem was 4x minus, because you're going to see these tomorrow. So it has to go that line through this point, and this happened to be a perpendicular one. So we want the equation of a line perpendicular to that one. What's the problem, or what's the first thing you want to do?
Solve for y.
Solve for y in the donor line, the one that's like donating a slope to me. So when you solve for y, there's a couple of different ways you can do it, but I'm just kind of sticking with the typical way that most of you did, was first we subtract 4x from both sides and write it after the equal to sign. And then we divide everybody through by negative 3. And you would get y equals, what do we do with that double negative?
Positive.
It's positive. So double negative, negative 4 over negative 3 is positive 4 thirds. So 4 thirds x minus 5 thirds. Okay. This is the original line, the donor line, that's donating its slope to the new and improved line that we're going to create. We wish to be perpendicular to this slope. So what slope is perpendicular to 4 thirds?
Negative
3 over 4. You must flip and change the sign or negate. So negative 3 fourths is the new slope that we want to create our new line with. Oh, I don't even know where I wrote that. Negative 3 fourths. And we have the point, so negative 4, 2. And we're right back with the same bits of information now that we had a minute ago. We have a slope, and we have a point. So we have an M, an X, and a Y, and you've got to figure out what B is. So write down, and those of you that just kind of stuck with the game plan and wrote down, like, Y equals MX plus B, and Y is 2, and my slope is negative 3 fourths, and this is negative 4 plus B, tended to get the answer right, but right here's where the problem hit again. Crash, right here. Can you key that in? Negative 3 fourths times negative 4. Practice it so that you can do it tomorrow. So negative 3 fourths times negative 4. Your calculator should read 3, right? Positive 3. Raise your hand if you got positive 3 showing, because if you don't, that's a problem. So negative 4, 3 fourths times negative 4 is positive 3. So positive 3 plus B. Is it possible that your B is not going to be a weird fraction? Yeah, this one's not going to be a weird fraction. Are we going to add 3 to both sides or subtract? Subtract 3. So therefore, when you solve for your B, it's negative 1. And then you just put it into the formula. So there were lots of mistakes, the same people making the same mistakes on those type of problems. And these were just pretty too typical. Nothing hard, nothing fancy. Just did you know what you were doing? Some people didn't flip. Some people flipped but didn't change the sign. And so there was lots of mistakes on there. So take a look at that on your own for tomorrow, because you'll have some of those tomorrow too. So if you have this sheet tomorrow, it might be helpful as you're taking your quiz, because these are correct, the correct approach. That's all I got. I squeezed that in really fast. Okay. Analyst, I have yours. Sorry, I was using yours as the.
Oh.
I had a couple that I was. Raul.
Oh. Yeah, I thought we were missing.
Yeah, I was using this for
Here's your calculator. So you
Thank you. Okay, we'll see you all tomorrow.